Welcome back. I'm Mark Bayshore. In the big scheme of things, January can be an easy month to forget. Noisemakers, football, then crickets. Okay, it's winter in Michigan, not crickets, but you know what I mean. That has not been the case this month in our state. The Flint water crisis exploded into a national story that even generated international coverage. To help sort out where we stand on Flint and hopefully one other topic or two before the segment is through, we want to welcome back State Capitol correspondent, host of Off the Record on WKAR-TV, Tim Skubick.
Mark, good to see you again.
Great
Happy
to
New
see
Year,
you.
Man.
Thank you for joining us. Belated Happy New Year to both of you. We also want to welcome back Jonathan Osting, his first visit as a reporter for the Detroit News.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Good to see you. Congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you.
We would ordinarily go back a few weeks and review and then update what's happened throughout the course of the month, but so much is happening on the Flint front, we may only go back a matter of days. Just yesterday, we learned that state workers in Flint got water delivered for water coolers. While residents were hearing that their water was safe, we've learned in the meantime, of course, that it was not safe. How is this news of bottled water getting delivered to state offices going over?
Well, the optics are ugly. If you're the Snyder administration, you're going, what else could happen? Mm. And this one is not good news. They tried to explain away that the state did not know that there was lead in the water at the time that the water coolers were put in. But they can't dance around the appearance that at the time that the people in Flint were drinking the dirty water, the state was taking action to provide clean water to its workers, and it just doesn't look very good.
Sure, yeah. This decision to bring in water coolers was actually precipitated by a notice sent out by the city, which was required by the state because the Department of Environmental Quality had found unusually high levels of essentially some chemicals that are used for chlorinating water in that process. So the state, you know, knew that the water here had some problems at that point. They weren't completely ignoring it. It was unrelated to the lead. That wasn't even discovered by independent researchers until months later. But the city had said, you know what, it's still safe to drink this. The state went the extra step to say, well, we want to give our employees the option not to do so.
We'll point out that criticism of the governor got up close and personal last night in Ann Arbor when a couple patrons of the Old Town Tavern in Ann Arbor, confronted Mr. Snyder as he was having something to eat with a friend, got heckled. Any particular thoughts on this development?
None.
I love Old Town. It's a pretty small place. I could see if there were a couple people who were angry. It's pretty close quarters and would have been an uncomfortable situation. From the sounds of it, it did sound, you know, kind of like it was just a few people. It wasn't like the entire bar started shouting at
Rick
Snyder. Like he did decide to leave as a result. It has to be uncomfortable. He knows people are angry. People are putting up signs in his neighborhood as well.
One employee pointed out that he very nearly entered, had a meal, and exited without anybody noticing. So,
and apparently the two people that confronted the governor afterwards were disappointed that nobody else in the restaurant got up and joined into the discussion.
Indeed. Now, there are dozens of angles from which to discuss the Flint situation. One of the most recurring in recent days has been the finances involved here, financial culpability, if you will. It's gotten hotter here in the last few days. Where is the discussion today on how much money is budgeted for this and who will be paying for these costs?
Well, nobody knows. Talked to John Roberts, the budget director, this week. There was a closed-door meeting with the governor's cabinet on Wednesday, I think it was, and the number of a, quote, couple of $100 million was tossed around. The administration was not happy that number got out. Here's the bottom line. The governor will have a number in his February 10th budget message, and it will be more than what the state has spent thus far, which is about $38 to $40 million. Most recently, $28 million from the legislature yesterday. The real bugaboo here is nobody knows what the final dollar amount will be on the replacement, if any, of water pipes in Flint. If you tear them all out and put stuff new in, it's X. And if you don't do that and do something less, it's another number. And so we're sort of flying in the dark here. All we know for sure is the bill has not been paid.
Yeah, Just wanted to add, there's actually, you know, a couple pipe issues. You need to just replace lead service lines that are actually going into people's homes, or has the whole system been damaged? The governor, in his request for a major disaster declaration by the president, did cite some local estimates that replacing just lead service pipes in private residences would cost somewhere in the range of $60, $70 million, but replacing the entire underground infrastructure could be more like $700 million. The Flint mayor has said $1.5 billion. So we're certainly looking at a very large figure for eventual replacement of that underground.
Well, there is the federal government whose role is being discussed and may well be growing. Yesterday, Senator Stabenow and Peters and Congressman Dan Kildee proposed a significant financial shot in the arm. Here's Debbie Stabenow explaining that yesterday.
The governor has indicated it's about $800 million. His numbers, that's what he asked for, an emergency designation from the federal government. We are proposing that the state of Michigan come up with $400 million because of the public health emergency, the crisis for the families in Flint, that we will match that dollar for dollar.
What do you take away from that, Tim? Is the federal government going to be growing significantly here?
Well, yes, but again, we don't know the dollar amount. And here's the interesting thing about this story. State officials still don't know how many lead pipes there are going into homes and what the nature of the problem is. And all of the information is contained in 3x5 cards. Obviously, this data was gathered before the invention of the little thing called a computer. And somebody is physically going through all those cards to try to identify, if you will, where the pipes are so that the state can get its arms around where these are and what shape they are in. They're not there yet.
It crossed my mind whether or not a federal role is being evaluated because of the role the Environmental Protection Agency may have played or may not have played in this thing.
Yeah, well, it sounds like there's going to be a congressional hearing sort of looking at that issue. The EPA has admitted that it should have probably raised the alarm sooner once it realized that the state wasn't requiring corrosion controls were added to the Flint River water. So the EPA does have some culpability here. As far as the legislation that was introduced this week or proposed anyways, I mean, that's still a long process to get anything through Congress. I don't think the state should be counting on those dollars just yet. You know, the prospects of getting that through both chambers in D.C. Are still, our Washington reporter described it as something of a long shot.
Well, and you also have the prospect in Michigan, if you do this for Flint, there will certainly be other cities down the road who will then get to the head of the line and say, what about us? And so pretty soon you're talking about real money. And we already had the list come out of some cities that have lead levels that are higher than the kids in Flint. And there was about 7 or 8 cities on that list. So this is the proverbial fiscal ticking time bomb. And nobody's sure when it goes off how much damage it'll do financially for the state.
Well, a lot of the dollars that Senators Stabenow, Peters, and Congressman Kildee proposed yesterday are apparently earmarked for a center for the study of lead or some such thing, so that in the event of similar mishaps in the future, that there will be a database, there will be resources to turn to as far as how to turn. Kind of suggesting we have a broader infrastructure problem here in the country.
Well, I think everybody knows that with aging cities around the country, that this issue was going to come to a head someday. It happens to have come to a head in Flint, Michigan, and it was exacerbated by some direct government failures. That said, the governor, when he first talked about road funding 4 years ago, actually brought up infrastructure as a whole. So this has been on the radar both at the state and federal level for some time. It might be this crisis that actually compels some action.
And isn't that the essence of government? You know, the governor says he always argues the facts, and he has the facts on his side. You're right, Jonathan. When he talked about fixing the infrastructure, everybody's, oh, yeah, okay. It takes a crisis before you get the animal's attention to do something about it, and here we go again.
You probably prefer a little smaller crisis than this one, though.
I think he obviously would.
Yeah. It's Current State's month in review here on Current State on WKAR. Our guests are Tim Skubick and Jonathan Osting. Let's move on to the issue of personal culpability. In his State of the State address, Governor Snyder, not for the first time, apologized and took responsibility for the mess. Let's listen back to that.
To you, the people of Flint, I say tonight, as I have before, I am sorry and I will fix it. I'm sorry most of all that I let you down. You deserve better. You deserve accountability. You deserve to know that the buck stops here with me.
Who else, if anyone, has acknowledged culpability in the Flint water crisis?
Well, the DEQ director, Dan Wyant, did resign, didn't really say anything in the process, but he did acknowledge before that that the state was improperly interpreting some rules that should have, as I mentioned before, required it to treat this Flint River water with corrosion inhibitors, and it did not. The EPA has also acknowledged, again, that it should have perhaps raised the alarm sooner, pressed the state harder when it first caught whiff of the fact that these corrosion controls weren't added.
And the EPA official has lost her job over this, correct?
That's right. And two other DEQ employees have been suspended pending an investigation. The state is trying to fire them, but State Civil Service Commission rules don't let them do that right away.
Wednesday afternoon, Epic MRA offered the first glimpse of how the larger public feels about Governor Snyder's handling of the Flint crisis, and it asked them whether he should resign. We finally have some numbers. Let's take a quick look at those. 69% of those polled say the governor has done a poor job of managing the Flint crisis. What'd you take away from the Epic MRA numbers overall, Tim?
Well, the thing that struck me was the division on the races based on this. You had basically the Caucasian community being a little more supportive of the governor, not a majority, but like 8% of the African Americans say the governor is doing a good job, and 55% said this guy should go. So there's clearly a problem there. The governor's never been very popular among African American voters, and this just sort of cements that sort of thing. If you watch the Rachel Maddow show the other night, the town hall, whenever the term of Governor Snyder and resignation were used in the same sentence, the audience just erupted. And so the polling data from Bernie Porn underscores that attitude out there right now.
There was a number in terms of assessing Governor Snyder's performance overall, which was not quite as bad as the 69%. I want to say it was 61 or thereabouts.
It was 58, around 60. Yeah.
Yet, despite those dreadful numbers, 61% of those same people. Epic MRA polled 600 altogether. 61% of those people polled say the governor should not resign. Is there a disconnect?
A disconnect?
There?
No, not really, because I think some people, and it's hard to get inside people's minds, but some of them think, well, you know, it was on the governor's watch and he's admitted the mistakes, but he wasn't the guy supplying the information that it was relaxed, everything is fine. He wasn't the one who decided that we ought to put the corrosion in and say that we did when we didn't. But yet the buck stops with him, and I think those numbers reflect
sure.
that.
Sure. And if he were to resign, of course, then the lieutenant governor would take over, the same administration. So it's hard to say there'd be a huge change. I mean, the question is, regardless of who's culpable, who is in the best position right now to actually make a difference and try and resolve the problem? And the governor has at least made a valiant attempt to say that is going to be his focus for the next 3 years.
I'd use this analogy. It's like a fifth grader who has gotten straight A's and all of a sudden gets an F. What does that fifth grader do? And I mean this not disrespectfully. I'm not calling the governor a fifth grader, but what does that fifth grader do? They redouble their efforts to do the best they can, and by golly, they're going to get that A back there.
That's
and
what we're seeing.
Some Republicans have said to me, who would you want fixing this problem? This governor is the guy who can fix it. The question is, the people obviously are not quite sure he can, and he may not have it fixed by the time he leaves office.
We're not fast enough. You know, it's like it can't get fixed fast enough. Inevitably, this has rekindled the state's emergency manager law as an issue.
Bingo.
We've got an election that is on the distant horizon, but it's still getting talked about an awful lot. What does this bode for for the future of Michigan's emergency manager law. Jonathan, any thoughts?
Well, in the near-term future, I don't think the Republican-led legislature is going to have any appetite to revisit it, but it's certainly going to be an election issue come 2016 and come 2018 especially. The GOP-led legislature can say correctly right now that, in fact, there are no emergency managers running cities anymore. They say this shows that it's worked. Of course, Flint seems to be a real notable exception to that argument. These decisions were made while the city was under control of an emergency financial manager. And even though they did try and get sign-off from the city on some of these steps, ultimately, they didn't need to. This was the state was in control of the city at the time this happened.
It's dangerous to make predictions, but let's go there. Here's the Democratic message. The emergency manager was there because and after the Republican legislature ignored what the people said on the ballot. Remember, the people voted to eliminate the EM, and the Republican legislature came back and rewrote the law and reinstated it, and that gave rise to this situation. So the Democrats have been handed a fat softball. And if they can't hit this out of the park and get control of the House, they ought to be lined up and shot, some Democrats are saying. I talked to one insider yesterday, and they are now polling and doing research as to how to message this, that basically all this stuff happened as a result of the Republicans and the emergency manager. Their major challenge is there are so many different messages that they can't be all over the lot. They've got to focus on one, and what is that message is basically the Republicans are to blame, and they will say that over and over and over as we move into this election cycle.
What has this Flint water crisis done to the Republican brand? And I'll refine that kind of a two-part question. What does this mean for Brian Kelly, Bill Schuette, and other Republicans close to the Snyder administration who may have aspirations for governor in 2018?
Well, you can already see Bill Schuette sort of trying to distance himself from the situation. He's announced his own independent, semi-independent investigation being led by a couple attorneys who happen to have donated money to him and Rick Snyder. One of the attorneys made those donations. So he's trying to distance himself pretty clearly, I think. But it will be an issue. I think what Democrats will argue is that this speaks to the political philosophy of a small government that is, you know, not capable of responding to a crisis when one emerges.
And the other line they're going to do is that the Snyder administration, being the CPA that he is, had people around him who were simply focused on the bottom line, quote, save the money. And the Democrats will argue you have to look above the bottom line at the people that are involved and what's the impact on them. It's not just about the money. It's about the people. There are a lot of campaign messages that will come out of this, and they're looking at that right now.
That was one of Mark Schauer's big messages a year and a half ago. And it certainly seems like it'd have a lot more legs right now in retrospect because of this Flint crisis.
You know, as we speak here on Friday morning, Tim and Jonathan, you're both coming from a taping of Off the Record involving Dana Nessel, who was the driving force behind a ballot campaign to put LGBT reforms into the state constitution. That is over from what we understand.
She just drove the petition drive into the ditch. Okay, she announced on the show that they're not going forward. It's on hold. She may be back in 2018.
What's behind that?
Not enough money and a division in the community. And that's pretty much the simple way to put it.
And those two are directly related. The reason they had trouble raising funds is because two of the state's biggest LGBT advocacy groups, Equality Michigan and then ACLU of Michigan, were opposed to this petition drive. They thought that it was too soon. They saw what happened in Houston earlier this year, maybe late last, when an equal rights ordinance that had polled well went down
backfired.
In flames.
Yeah.
She points out that Michigan is not Houston, but here she went to the business community and said, guys, I need your money, okay? And they said, well, you guys are fighting amongst yourselves. We're probably not going to kick in, although we're with you. We think we ought to do this. And she completely rejects the idea of holding out for a legislature, a new one or this current one, to do anything about this. So she basically just threw in the towel.
Veteran state capitol correspondent, host of Off the Record on WKAR-TV, Tim Skubick, and the Detroit News, Jonathan Osting. It's been Current States Month in Review. Jonathan, Tim, many thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.